Tantor Audio presents Zfinity by David Accord. Narrated by Graham Halstead. Chapter 1. Journal entry, December 31st, 2AZ, after Zed. Hello, Journal. It's the end of another year and we're still alive. We've been busy for most of the month, and I've been a little lax in making prompt entries, but I vow to do better. Julie finally finished reading what I have written so far, and she said it was good, but a bit perfunctory. I know, it's a big four-syllable word. She sounded more and more like Zach every day. God help us. Anyway, I'll try to personalize my entries more. First, we just finished a huge job. Terry called it Operation Bell Road, and we did it on Christmas Eve. Terry had located a large horde of those nasty, stinking bastards walking along Bell Road. They had amassed together and were slowly making their way toward our homes. We, as in Zach, said we couldn't ignore them. A group meeting was held, and we decided that we needed to kill them off in order for us to live in this area in relative safety. I must admit, I was a little scared that day when we drove up to them. The sight of so many of them massed together was unnerving. They didn't hesitate when they spotted us, and somehow seemed to pick up momentum as they headed toward us. We fired on them for hours. There were times I was certain we'd be overwhelmed and killed, but we prevailed. Zach, in his usual manner, kept a running number in his head the entire time we were killing them, and it took over 12 hours to kill them all. The final body count was a little over 2,000. When the last zombie's head exploded in a hail of gunfire, I think everyone's euphoria only lasted a couple of minutes, and then fatigue set in. I had a hard time keeping my eyes open on the way home, until Terry said all of the weapons needed to be cleaned before bed. Then Zach informed us we were going to have to burn all of the corpses. Thank God Julie convinced him to wait at least until after Christmas. We did it, though. We used bulldozers to stack them up into piles. Zach called them pyres. Threw on some fuel, scraps, old tires, whatever was flammable, and lit them up. It was every bit as hard as killing them, but we did it. The only person who actually grumbled about it was Wanda, but that's the norm for her. She's a sour old woman. Okay, here is where we stand so far this winter. Food. Our supplies have been good. We still have plenty of stores, and our greenhouses are producing nicely, including a really nice batch of weed, much to Zach's chagrin. The livestock are enduring the winter with no major issues. In addition, Fred and the boys have taken a strong liking to fishing. We've had lots of fish fries. More than I care for. Living conditions. Terry and I are living with Zach and Julie. Kelly has been living with us, too. The rest of the women from Birmingham are living in the house at the radio tower. Tommy and Joe have been living with Fred, and, of course, Rowdy has been living in his tour bus, which is parked out beside the old homestead. New arrivals. Occasionally, people will show up at the radio tower. They'll stay for a day or two and then move on, believing in their soul that they know of some place they are sure a modern civilization still exists. Funny, none of them name the same place or city where this supposed sanctuary is located. We listen silently to them as they weave this magical tale and try to talk us into going with them. We've given up trying to convince these people differently. Fred said that once they get it in their head, there's nothing you can do to convince them differently. We give them some food, maybe some fuel if we have enough to spare, and watch them drive away as we wave half-heartedly. Everyone is healthy and doing okay. No illnesses or major injuries to report. The boys, Tommy and Joe, are inseparable. I bet they even take a crap at the same time. It's amazing how much they've grown in so short a time. Tomorrow, we're going to go on another zombie hunt. This one is different, though. We're going to kill a bunch of little kids who've been trapped in a school. I'm not looking forward to it. But as Zach says, it has to be done. I'll write more about it later. Andy.
Chapter 2. The School. In retrospect, the music was a mistake. It was an elementary school, directly across from the radio tower. There was nothing fancy about it, a simple brick and mortar built in the style of most public schools in the last few decades. I liked the design. The windows were smaller than those large stained glass windows at the church, and all of the entry doors were steel with heavy locks. We'd conducted a brief recon on it a couple of months ago. I parked in front, honked the horn a couple of times, and waited. Almost immediately, little ghoulish faces pressed themselves against the windows, staring out, their rotted faces contorted in a primeval rage. Julie and I sat in the comfort and security of the truck, listening to a Marvin Gaye CD while watching the little kids trying to claw their way through the windows. We had recently finished a massive operation along Bell Road in which we killed off somewhere around 2,000 of the things. They covered the full spectrum of age, race, and gender, including kids. Somehow, it seemed different now. This was a group of little kids, none of them over 10. It was hard to imagine them as mindless killing machines. Looking through the windows at the faces of all of those children was both sad and unnerving. We had been avoiding this issue along with all of the other elementary schools in the area, but after a family discussion over lunch one day, we came to a decision. Our survival plan dictated that we could not ignore the issue any longer, so the decision was made to take care of them. Now we were back. The rest of the gang was with us, and our plan of action was to clear the school, which was an ambiguous way of saying we were going to kill all of the little zombie bastards trapped inside. The plan was simple. Park the truck in front and use it as a firing platform. Open the front doors and play loud music to entice them to come outside. When the kids filtered out looking for a tasty human morsel, we give each one an after-school headshot special. Rowdy's expression was pensive.
"Man, I've killed my share of zombies, but killing all those little kids..."
He left the sentence unfinished. Fred gave me a look. He and I had previously discussed the issue and knew how emotionally difficult it was going to be. Shooting preteen children, even if they were now nothing more than little monsters, was going to be difficult. I took Fred's cue. "Listen up," I said. "Fred and I will be the only ones who are going to be doing the shooting. We only want you to join in if we get overwhelmed with targets." It sounded good, calling them targets. Everyone nodded silently, gratefully. I think they had the same sentiments as Rowdy. Nobody wanted to kill a child. Terry and Andy got busy drilling open the locks to the main entry doors and made quick work. They used their weight to hold the doors closed until I gave the signal. Terry nodded, and the two of them ran to the back of the truck. Julie turned the volume up on the car stereo, and the CD began playing a song about sexual healing. The children came pouring out. As I shot target after target, I knew from then on that my dreams were going to be filled with images of little heads exploding in a spray of putrid black ooze while Marvin Gaye's beautiful voice sang in the background. Yep, the music was a mistake. Nevertheless, I did not hesitate when the first one came shambling out of the school. He was a fair-haired boy dressed in khaki slacks and a dark blue polo shirt. Hell, all of the little boys were. The little girls were wearing the same type of pants, but with light blue shirts. Most had colorful ribbons in their hair. I had no doubt it was the kind of school parents were proud to send their kids to. I thought of how it used to be. The soccer moms would be lined up in the parking lot waiting for school to let out for the day. The final bell drowned out by the squeals of joy and laughter. A couple of dozen exited the school. They moved slow and awkward, the freezing temperature assured it. Yet they still moved with a purpose. Some of them even tried to flank around us. I would claim that after shooting the first two or three of the little tykes, it became easy, but I'd be lying. Each time I fired, my stomach knotted up a little more. There were several minutes of silence after the last one dropped. Fred and I reloaded quietly.
"Do you think that's all of them?" Terry asked as he peered inside.
"Hell, I hope so,"
Rowdy muttered. He looked like he needed a drink.
"We've got to go inside and clear out any that are left," I commented and gave my friends a look.
"I think Fred and I ought to be the ones to do it. The two of us can have group therapy with the docs later," I said with a half-hearted chuckle. Nobody else thought it was funny. "We'll keep in radio contact and give sit reps every 2 minutes."
"How'd it go?"
Andy asked when Fred and I emerged an hour later.
"There's about 20 more inside," I said. "Mostly kids, a few women. I assume they were teachers."
I didn't describe how the teachers had dozens of little bites all over their exposed skin. They'd see for themselves soon enough. Big Mac walked up and handed us each a steaming cup of tea.
"It'll calm your nerves," she said quietly.
We nodded our thanks.
"How much cleanup do you reckon it'll need before anyone can live in there?" she asked.
"The corpses will be the easy part," I replied with a grimace. "There's a lot of water damage inside from busted pipes, and it looks like the sewer has backed up at some point."
Mac nodded thoughtfully. "If you men want to take a rest break, I'm going to pile these up and get a fire going."
Without waiting for an answer, she put some work gloves on and began dragging a couple of the small corpses to the side of the parking lot. We all glanced at each other. It was contrary to our nature to sit, doing nothing, while someone else was working. All of us grabbed a corpse and followed Mac. It didn't take long to get them all piled up, and Mac got the fires going in no time.
"I don't think I'll ever get used to this part," she said as the bodies became engulfed in flames.
I understood. After killing all of the zombies along Bell Road, we had spent 2 very long days piling up the corpses into pyres and burning them. It was miserable, dirty, disgusting work. The pyres were hot, but nobody was inclined to stand near the little corpses and warm themselves. We watched silently, but our thoughts were interrupted by the sound of 2 quick gunshots coming from the nearby ballpark. We took off at a run.
"We got one!"
Tommy exclaimed excitedly as we ran up. He pointed to the body lying on the ground. It was an adult male, definitely infected, but there were slight differences in his appearance. A lot of the decomposition was either gone or replaced with badly scarred tissue. Julie ran over to her brother and inspected him closely for any injuries.
"Did it attack you?"
she asked. Tommy shook his head while Julie continued looking him over. He finally shrugged her off with a scoff.
"Give us a report, young soldier," Terry ordered.
I hid a smile. Lately, Terry had taken it upon himself to train Tommy and Joe in soldiering skills. The two of them loved it, but Terry's current order seemed to confuse Tommy somewhat. Joe jumped in.
"Tommy and I were scouting the area," he explained, "and we spotted this one crouched down beside the dumpster. He was spying on y'all."
Terry fixed him with a stare.
"All right, you two, be very specific and don't exaggerate. Explain what you mean by spying on us."
"He was hiding from y'all behind the dumpster and peeking out from time to time," Joe said. "He was definitely watching what y'all were doing."
"Are you two positive?" Terry asked.
Both Tommy and Joe nodded.
"Affirmative,"
Tommy said as an afterthought. Terry glanced over at Fred and me.
"How long did you two watch him?" I asked.
"About 10 minutes, Joe replied. "We kept waiting for him to do something, but he didn't. He just crouched there watching y'all."
"So what happened then?" Terry pressed.
"Well, we kind of got tired of watching him, so Tommy called him a turd face," Joe said. "He turned around then and came at us. We kept his ass."
Everyone chuckled. Well, everyone except Fred.
"I believe we have another indicator that Z-14 is in effect," he said somberly.
I nodded in agreement. Z-14. It was my last zombie rule. They are evolving. When the plague went viral a little over 2 years ago now, it sickened and killed millions of people, perhaps even billions, but not everyone who became infected died. A sizable number of them became something else. They went crazy and turned violent, attacking and eating anything living. I was convinced they would all die off eventually. After all, a decomposing body isn't going to live very long, right? I was somewhat correct. A lot of them did, in fact, die, but not all. The ones that didn't die started changing, evolving. At least a portion of their brain functions were starting to work again, and their cells were beginning to regenerate. Oh, they still couldn't add 2 and 2, but they were beginning to display at least a small amount of awareness and a cognitive thought process. This one, lying at our feet, was a good example. It was a man. He could have been 20 or he could have been 50. Short in stature, but large-framed, perhaps muscular at one time, and wearing working man's clothes. I noted the brown, calf-high lace-up boots. They were heavily scuffed, but otherwise still in good shape. There was a lot of missing tissue from around his face and exposed hands, but otherwise he did not look like he was going to fall down dead anytime soon. At least, not until somebody pulled a bullet into his brain pan. So, somehow, he knew he was outnumbered and made the decision to sit here and hide. He was probably waiting on a target of opportunity, I opined. If that's true, we're going to have to change some of our military doctrines, Terry said. He made a good point. I looked at Fred and Mac, who nodded in agreement. I rubbed my face. That'll be a good topic of discussion over supper. Chapter 3. Kifo Nawewe. I placed another log in the wood stove as well as the fireplace before crawling into bed and snuggling up against Julie. "Holy shit, your feet are cold," she complained. I smiled and moved them away from her. "How was Rick today?" I asked.
"Little Frederick was full of himself," Julie replied. Our son, Frederick Zachariah Gunderson, was 4 months old now. I liked calling him Rick. Julie preferred Frederick. He couldn't get enough to eat, crapped in his diapers a few times, and pissed on me once when I was changing him.
"I hope you cleaned up before bed," I said as I chuckled.
"What were you and Terry talking about earlier?" she asked.
"We're going to head into town in the morning. He wants to go over to the Boy Scouts office in West Nashville."
"What for?"
she asked sleepily. "He wants to get some merit badges and stuff. When Tommy and Joe complete a block of training, he'll give them out as a reward."
"Oh, how cute,"
I chuckled. "Terry's serious about his training. Anyway, it's only a few miles from here. I'm guessing it'll only take a couple of hours. Please don't tell the boys." Julie turned over and draped her arms around me.
"I can be bribed into silence," she cooed, which succeeded in gaining my undivided attention. We had not had sex since she had given birth. Well, I mean, we'd done other things, but not good old-fashioned toe-curling sex, and it was killing me.
"Are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting?" I asked hopefully. Julie answered by rubbing lower. "Are you sure?"
"Just be gentle, love," she whispered as she pulled her nightshirt off.
Terry and I headed out after breakfast, drove straight down Nolansville Pike and hung a left on Thompson Lane and continued driving west as it changed into Woodmont Boulevard. The Boy Scouts corporate office was located on the corner of Woodmont and Hillsborough Road. We looked it over as we drove into the parking lot.
"It's bigger than I thought," Terry observed as he looked at the building.
I nodded in agreement.
"Well, I guess it's a no-go. We can come back later when we have more people."
"Hell, let's give it a try. If it's too risky, we'll back out and move on," I said, and pointed. "Besides, There aren't any cars in the parking lot. Chances are pretty good the place is empty, or almost empty. My guess was right. The building was empty, and we cleared it easily. The problem was not the size of the facility, it was the contents. The scout supply store had been completely looted. The only merit badges we found were on sashes, which were framed and proudly hanging on office walls.
"Well, I guess I can cut all of the badges off and then we can sew them back on when they earn them," Terry lamented.
I took one of them off the wall and carefully removed it from the picture frame. Holding it up, I looked the sash over.
"The sash is a rather simple pattern. Julie can sew some new ones with some cloth. It might look a little better than a used sash."
Terry looked at me.
"Hell, why didn't we think of it sooner?"
I agreed with a chuckle. We were about to start a secondary search for anything we could find useful, but stopped when we heard the sound of a car outside. We traded a look, checked our weapons again, and stepped out quickly. We had our assault rifles rigged with front slings, combat ready where we could bring them up and start shooting quickly if needed. The two of us exited the building and watched as a GMC Yukon Denali parked near my truck and four people exited. Their body language was tense, unfriendly. Terry instinctively sidestepped to the left of me.
"Hello," I said while looking them over.
The youngest one was a boy about my age. Two of them, a man and woman, appeared to be a year or two older, and one was a man in his 40s. They were all black, and all were wearing black clothing, complete with berets and mirrored sunglasses. Their jackets were festooned with military ribbons and patches. They all had weapons, and weren't smiling. There was a tense silence before the older one spoke.
"What were you two doing inside my building?" he asked.
His voice was icy, menacing. I guess he thought he was being intimidating. I looked at him with contempt. "Your building?" I asked. He nodded slowly, which I assume was supposed to appear menacing.
"We charge a tax for using our property," he continued. "You two white boys haven't paid."
"Sure we did. I left it inside for you," I responded, and hooked my thumb toward the door behind me. He looked at me curiously. "I took a big nasty shit right in the middle of the lobby. If you hurry, it'll still be warm," I continued evenly. "It'll be the most nutritious lunch you've had in quite a while." The younger one scowled at me. The older one, I guess he was their leader, smiled without humor. I returned his humorless smile.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Is this supposed to be the part of your fantasy where we piss our pants and beg for your forgiveness?" I asked.
"You're gonna beg, all right," the younger one said with a sneer.
"Don't count on it," Terry said in a growl.
"You two have some balls on you, I'll give you that," the older one said.
His tone had lightened up a little, but not by much. I tried a slightly different tact.
"We're not looking for trouble," I said.
"But we're not anyone's bitch, and we don't pay taxes. If you have a problem with it, start shooting." I finished what I had to say and glared in their direction, waiting for them to make a move. Mentally, I was making a threat assessment, as I'm sure Terry was doing as well. The older one had a handgun still in the holster. The one who was my age had an assault rifle that appeared to be an AK-47. It was slung in front like ours, ready for quick use. A very lethal weapon, but he had one problem. The safety lever on an AK is fairly large and therefore easily visible. I noted it was still in the safe position. So, the first person I was going to shoot was the one in the middle. Knowing how good a shot Julie and Andy were, I wasn't going to underestimate the woman. She was going to be the secondary target. There was a quiet, tense moment that dragged out for several seconds. Suddenly, the older man started laughing. His bared teeth, the ones he still had, were a dark yellow, almost brown in color.
"Hakuna Matata, my friends. There are no worries. There is no need for any shooting today. We are brothers in arms, after all," he said.
I would probably agree, I responded. But your Black Panther getup indicates an obvious disdain toward white people. Terry glanced over at me. I casually gave the hand signal for caution before returning it to the pistol grip of my assault rifle.
"Where are you two from?" he asked.
"This is my hometown. My name's Zach," I responded.
"And you?"
he asked, looking at Terry.
"I'm from Fort Campbell," he replied. "Where are you from?"
The older one waved his hand around.
"The world is my domain," he said with an egotistical grin.
Wonderful, I thought. Another little man who thought he was king. I watched him intently as he looked around, grinning with his 8 or 9 teeth.
"Ah, well, we have other things to do. We will bid you goodbye then. Ki fo na wei wei," he said, and turned toward their vehicle.
As he did so, he nodded slightly at his companions. I was almost too late in the translation, but managed to bring my weapon up at the same time as the three minions. I fired a quick double tap in my primary target, and then shot the woman with a double tap to the chest. Terry didn't hesitate. As soon as I started firing, he shot the youngest man. The woman grunted in pain and started shooting wildly with her AK as she fell to the ground, stitching a line of bullets between us. Terry shot her again as I focused on the older one. He had his revolver out and fired before he aimed. I heard the impact of the bullet against the building several feet above my head as I put 4 quick rounds in his chest. He fired again as he fell, and I heard Terry grunt. I aimed determinedly and put 1 more round in his head for good measure.
"Are you hit?" I asked as I scanned the other 3. None of them was moving.
"It's only a scratch," Terry replied tensely.
I hastened a quick glance. There was a crimson circle forming around his thigh. Shit.
"Cover me," I said, rushed forward and got all of the weapons away from our new adversaries.
Surprisingly, the female was still alive, even though we'd shot her 3 times. She looked at me in fright as a froth of blood formed around her mouth. I realized then she was younger than I first believed, closer to my age or even younger, but I had no sympathy. They had tried to kill us, after all. Once I had secured all of the weapons, I hurried back to Terry and inspected his wound closer. There was a horizontal trough the size of my little finger across his leg, and bright red blood seeped from it. It wasn't pulsing out, though, which I took as a good sign. "It caught the inner part of your thigh. You're lucky it's only a grazing wound. If it went any deeper, it could have severed your femoral artery." I looked up at him and grinned. "Any higher and he would have shot your balls off." Terry chuckled nervously. I dropped my knapsack, retrieved a first aid kit, and went to work. I cut a larger hole in his pants, squirted the gash full of Neosporin, and tightly wrapped it with an army surplus field dressing. I checked my work with satisfaction before standing.
"It'll have to do for now. It burns like hell, but you're right. I was lucky. Andy would have been devastated if my balls were shot off," he replied.
Now it was my turn to laugh. "Our scavenging is done for the day," I declared. "Let's go home." Terry clenched his teeth tightly as I helped him back to the truck, determined not to cry out in pain.
"What did the older one say?" Terry asked. "I saw you tense when he said it."
"Ki fo na wei wei. It means something like death to you in Swahili," I said.
Terry chortled.
"Damn, Zach. Is there anything you don't know?" he asked sarcastically.
There was plenty, I thought. "I had a friend on the track team who was from Kenya," I explained. "He spoke Swahili and taught me a few phrases."
Terry nodded in understanding, and I hurriedly checked their SUV for anything we could use. The Yukon was a fairly newer model, but it appeared to be poorly maintained, and the interior smelled like B.O. There were some canned food products, a couple of cardboard boxes of ammunition, and 4 plastic army surplus canteens. I took the food and ammunition, but left the dirty canteens. Before getting in the truck,
I took a moment to look them over.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?